There are so many things wrong with this deal on so many levels, it's very difficult to know where to start. These submarines clearly do not pass the pub test. As a GP, when you're analysing things, you actually, if you've got a new drug on the market, it has to go through a whole set of tests. You have to think about the choices you're making. What is the cost-benefit of what you're doing? So, what is the cost-effectiveness of these submarines? If these submarines went before a drug committee, they would be laughed out of the room. Why are we doing this? What are we trying to fix? Are they going to be effective for what we're trying to fix? What are they going to cost? What are the side effects? What other treatments are there that would be just as good or better for making Australians more secure? Why are they the best option? There's no attempt being in the Parliament or with the public to explain why we need these submarines. There's all this, China's getting more powerful, and if you knew what I knew, you'd agree with us. But there's been no debate. Even the Foreign Minister was left out of this decision. This was Morrison's secret deal, and it was a fabulous media opportunity, but that's about it. Is it going to make us secure? Remains to be seen. Very unlikely. Is it going to create jobs? If it does create jobs, I want one. At $18 million a job, fantastic. Is it going to strengthen our alliance with the UK and the US? Well, perhaps, because we're going to be putting so much money towards their shipbuilding yards. Will they be effective? If they're medication, they'd have to be. These have very limited function. These are long-range, hunter-killer submarines designed to work in the South China Sea. These are reducing our ability to defend ourselves. They will not work well in the shallow northern waters of Australia. There are a very small number of subs. Hard to know if they'll make any difference anyway. It's very difficult to man submarines, and usually at least half of them are out of action at any one point. There was an excellent article in The Conversation saying that there's a 75% likelihood that these subs will be obsolete by 2050. Given the first of these subs is likely to come on board at about 2040, and I think the production line is supposed to keep going till 2065, this makes a nonsense of this in terms of planning. And defence needs for Australia, and defending Australia is important, is talking about things like underwater drones and smart landmines, and they're already in development now, way before these submarines are going ahead. The monetary cost, $368 billion. What defence project hasn't blown out, and this is such an extraordinary amount of money, so hard to conceptualise. If we wanted to defend Australia, we could get many more ready-made, off-the-shelf submarines and still have a lot of money that was available to provide for so many other crucial needs. And I'm a bit sceptical as to whether they'll actually ever eventuate. Given the defence, if you look at the Auditor General's review of defence expenditure that came out earlier this year, my money's on that we'll spend billions and billions and then they'll be cancelled. As a GP, I'm really interested in side effects. These could be divided into international, national, local. So internationally, these are a huge nuclear proliferation risk. These submarines drive a truck through a loophole in the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Each submarine has between, I think it's 8 and 20 bombs worth of highly enriched uranium. This is on a stealth weapon, so these subs can disappear for 6 months. So to pretend that they can be safeguarded is a nonsense. Australia has to sign the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons to demonstrate that we are not, in fact, in the longer run, thinking about acquiring nuclear weapons. South Korea, Japan and Iran are now, after Australia's example, expressing keen interest in acquiring their own nuclear submarines, which is no surprise because it would enable them to acquire highly enriched weapons-grade uranium. It's damaged relationships in our region, including with Malaysia and Indonesia. It risks, given the huge expenditure, starting a regional arms race, which would be a tragedy for so many countries. So now I'm going to move on the national side effects. It's a major loss of sovereignty. We cannot operate these submarines without the UK and the US being involved. It will bleed the defence budget and so many other budgets white. It means the defence may well not be getting the right things to defend Australia. This is such a ridiculously expensive undertaking. It locks us in. It enmeshes us so closely with an alliance that's taken us into too many wars. Vietnam, over 3 million Vietnamese people died in that war. For what? And there were millions of refugees. In Iraq, not many Australians died, but between 600,000 and 1.6 million Iraqis did die. And again, millions of people became refugees. And again, the region was destabilised, just as happened in Vietnam. In Afghanistan, you wonder what that was all for. Other reasons why these subs may never happen is, in fact, they've got to get through US Congress yet, and that's far from a done deal. And also, the US and UK submarine programs are both well behind budget, well behind time, and well over budget. Another national side effect is the push for nuclear power. The enthusiasts have come out of the woodwork. Nuclear power is much more expensive than renewables and very slow and highly unsuited to Australia. But with a few billion subsidies, which sometimes defence tends to throw around, who knows, it might be a goer. These subs will give us so much more nuclear waste. We will be left with not only the nuclear waste from the submarines we design and build, but also from the ones we get from America. Nuclear subs are a major problem in terms of waste. This waste is likely to end up again on Indigenous lands. They tend to put in remote places. Richard Miles may talk about it being defence land. It's still Indigenous land. It also will quite possibly reopen the whole argument about Australia becoming a dumping ground for the world's waste. This has happened before and it's likely to happen again. Have a look at this slide. This is 12 of the 21 retired nuclear submarines in England. This is how England, the UK, is dealing with its nuclear waste. It's just docked them. They're sitting there. Half of them have had the fuel taken out, half of them have not. They've all still got their reactors in there and they're just quietly rusting away. They pull them out of the dock every 15 years to check they're okay and then pop them back in again. Nuclear waste is not a solved problem and it has to be kept isolated from humans for about 100,000 years. So we need to think long and hard about the liability we're taking on with these subs. Another thing on side effects is the local side effects. The local side effects that shocked me is that despite our promises of gold standard IAEA safeguards, surprise, surprise, the regulator for safety for these submarines is going to be the Defence Minister instead of the independent Australian regulator. This is a disgrace. And the reason I'm so concerned about this is the example that the UK has set. For the last 6 years, since 2017, the UK has refused to release any information whatsoever about accidents on their subs. Legal appeals, freedom of information, all failed. And then a question in Parliament revealed that there was 406 episodes accidents on these subs in 2 years, and three of those involved radiation release. So there is no accountability where there is no transparency, and accountability to the minister, the Defence Minister, is not good enough. So what would I spend this money on if we got, say, 20 or 30 off-the-shelf subs, we'd leave, 40 billion. We might have another 300 billion odd to spend on Australians. Who'd have thought? So what would I spend it on? Just imagine 18 months of 300 public servants working on climate change, a good, long-term, strategically thought plan for Australians to deal with climate change. Imagine better healthcare. Imagine addressing poverty and bringing people on New Start onto a reasonable living. Access to housing, closing the gap, services for people with domestic violence threats, legal aid, and so much more. The third thing that we should be focusing on to make Australians more secure is diplomacy. The current budget for diplomacy is less than 1/10 of the budget for our defence. We need an independent foreign policy that, think about it, acts in Australia's best interest. Again, the AUKUS deal and AUKUS is such a huge thing, it really distorts our ability for diplomacy. And it really means we've got much less focus on what we really need, which is multilateral diplomacy, talking to lots of different countries about what the problems are. And I was asked to touch on the costs, and these are the direct costs, our health system. It was stripped of about $30 billion in the 4 years leading up to COVID. We have long waiting lists. If you're on a waiting list for a long time, by the time you get to get your surgery, you're sicker, you stay in hospital longer, the outcomes are worse. It makes absolutely no sense to have these long waiting lists. It's more expensive, but we still have them. Medicare, as a GP, I can tell you that gone are the days when you send someone to a specialist and they get bulk billed by a specialist. Long gone. We are heading down the track of an American health system and it's a tragedy. It's very expensive, getting increasingly more expensive. There's major underfunding and lack of strategic thought about preventive healthcare. And I'm quite sure as these submarines' expenses go up, there'll be more budget repair in the health system. I don't know what any of you are like, but I'm hopeless once it gets above about a billion. It's just a lot of money. 1 billion, 10 billion, 20 billion, whatever. So I thought of this slide. It's a little bit out of date. It's 2019. But it's just trying to get you to think about how big a billion is. And how this is 5 billion. So 100 schools, lots of teachers, 3 new regional hospitals. But wait, there's more. Nurses, doctors, fire and rescue vehicles, police officers. I mean, think of it in a bushfire. A lot of these would be mighty handy. And that's just 5 billion. That's just 5 billion with money to spare. ACOS has been saying for a while that 1 in 8 Australians, we are a wealthy country, this is a disgrace, 1 in 8 Australians lives in poverty, 1 in 6 children. Nearly 2/3 of people on Newstart are living in poverty. And of those people, most of them are around $300 a week below. So this is a really severe problem for a lot of people. This is the OECD unemployment benefit scale. Guess where Australia sits? That little red dot down the end? We're sitting comfortably between Russia and Romania in the unemployment benefits we're granting. We used to be, believe it or not, this is an improvement. When it was Morrison, we were equal bottom with Greece. One thing that COVID did show us is that we can deal with poverty, that we really halved poverty rates by increasing government supports and payments. But of course, over 2021, those were rapidly withdrawn. Social housing is a hot topic at the moment. There's been 25 years of underinvestment, and there's a shortfall of over 400,000 dwellings. Certainly, direct funding for these new dwellings and efficient financing is the way to go. And propping up first home buyers just makes everything more expensive. The real estate agents love it, but that's about it. There are 17,000 kids under the age of 12 every night who are homeless, and 120,000 adults. What we are doing at the moment is not enough. We're going backwards fast. Just to tread water, we need 15,000 dwellings every year. To make up the backlog, we need 36,000 dwellings a year. The current proposal that's just been deferred in federal parliament is for 30,000 dwellings over 5 years. Sorry, still going backwards. The cost for a program that actually would be likely to build 36,000 dwellings a year would be $5 billion a year. So if we did for 15 years, that's $45 billion. Compared to the submarines, it's a bit of a bargain, really. So domestic violence, this is a disgrace. Again, we are leaving these women and children unsupported. It's one of the main reasons people seek homeless services. And only 3% of people who seek long-term accommodation get it. And disgracefully, for an example, in Hobart in 2021-22, 3/4 of the women that went to the Hobart refuge were turned away because there was no space. So going back to getting beaten up again or going to live in their cars or on the couch of somebody who might be able to take them in for a week or two. It's worth remembering that only 6%, the people who live rough, are only 6% of the homeless. The homeless are pretty invisible. You only see roughly 1 in 20 of the people who are actually homeless. For every one homeless person you see, there's another 20 living in their cars or couch surfing. The myth of legal aid. People who are not got much money often get really terrible social and economic challenges, but only 8% of the people who are below the poverty line can get legal aid. That's a disgrace. Next slide. The Law Council of Australia, not the most radical body, has come out saying hundreds of millions of dollars of cuts have pushed legal aid, and this is hundreds of millions of dollars of cuts by both sides, to the brink of collapse. Closing the gap, well, there's so much I could say about this, but basically this is complex. It needs long-term planning. Again, we need another 350 public servants working for 18 months, although this time we must have Indigenous people on that task force. There is nothing we should be doing for the Aboriginals without them. The saying is nothing about us without us, because so much has been designed over the years with white fellas thinking what will be good for the others, and they need to be involved. So please vote yes. AUKUS is so problematic on so many levels, it's really hard to know where to start. It's an exorbitant cost. It's extremely risky. It sets a really dangerous proliferation precedent. It locks us into the next US war, and God help us, because that nobody will win a war with China. It's likely to spark a regional arms race. It's going to massively increase our nuclear waste burden. and it's going to have major impacts, as these two gentlemen will tell you, on the Australian community. This is a deeply flawed choice. We're choosing a very high-risk, aggressive war machine in the distant future that's probably going to be obsolete over building a fairer society and a genuinely more secure Australia. Thank you.